Welcome back, everyone, to the latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast, finally with our new artwork.
Yes.
I'm your host, Larry.
And I am your other host, Justin. I will say, even though I don't really know much about the scary stories thing, I love this artwork. It's amazing.
And I'm happy that people knew right away what the art was inspired by, like on Instagram and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
that made me feel better.
Well, yeah, especially because, I mean, we've been kind of talking about, like, do people really know what this is about? And, I mean, our Discord kind of proved that, not a lot of people did. But, yeah, like you said, as soon as we posted it up in Instagram, people started recognizing it. So that was nice.
Which is good. So this week we're reviewing the Child's Play remake.
Yes.
Before we get to that, Justin, I know we're recording a little bit earlier because of the holiday here in America. On Thursday. Why don't you tell us what you've been up to in the meantime, though?
Well, it was Canada Day for us.
That's not a real holiday.
Yes, it is.
No, you guys would drink maple syrup and go hang out at Timmy Hortons?
Timmy Hortons. It's Tim Hortons. Come on. No, it was just like a bunch of fireworks. And I don't know. I usually spend that day like doing a bunch of kids stuff with my kids. Yeah. Other than that, I mean... It's been like 3 days since we recorded, so.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give the bad news, though, because you do have a definite that.
Yes, I will not be seeing Midsummer, unfortunately.
Enter sad music, sad trombone.
Yeah, it really sucks. I was super bummed out about it when I found out last night, but I don't know.
I'm right with you. We were talking about it, and. This is different than Suspiria remake because we had a good feeling that was going to be hard to see.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only one theater in Columbus that was showing it.
There were no theaters
around. There's like seven or eight theaters in Salt Lake that are showing it. And it's been promoted in a way that Suspiria never was, even with it being an Amazon Studios project. And we really thought we were going to we planned this out with Rachel.
Months ago,
thinking we'd have access to it. And this really kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned last week, well, I don't know, actually know if it actually even made it the cut, but like the theater in which I saw Child's Play remake, it had a trailer for this. I've seen trailers like on TV. I never even watched TV and I saw a trailer for it on TV. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a bummer, but I think I'm going to take that extra time I have and put it towards doing something cool for the show for something else that we have coming up. Shortly.
Yes, we're trying to do a bunch of stuff for our 1 year, but yeah, it sucks. So next week it's just going to be Rachel and myself of the Zombie Girl podcast, obviously, and hopefully we'll try to keep under 4 hours without Justin there to keep us in line.
Oh no. Oh yeah, by the way, I won't be there this time because Suspiria was kind of a bummer for me. But you know what,
and that was a remake, so it was kind of like eh. But this is a brand new material, and Ari Aster is being pumped like the new Wes Craven. So
yeah, and I mean, like I do plan on seeing it whenever I get a chance to. I don't know how long that's going to be, but you know, whatever. It is what it is. I do remember though, I did start playing Final Fantasy IX, and just to get that jump rope achievement or not achievement trophy. Yeah.
Did you cheat like me?
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah.
And then I installed Final Fantasy XI today, which is, I hear, quite the undertaking. So, you know, other than that, though, can't really think about it, anything. What about you?
Sure. So I finished Nosferatu.
Okay. How was it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Great ending. I was really afraid that it was going to... I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah.
Very, very good ending. Very excited to read more of his. But I actually borrowed American Gods from a friend.
Okay. Neil Gaiman, right?
Yeah. And I've never read it before. But I started it yesterday. And I'm already like 150 pages into it.
It's okay.
It's really, really good. I'm really, really enjoying it. And I think after that, I might read The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. The depressing road.
And then I think after that, I'm going to go back to Joe Hill.
Oh yeah. What's next in line for Joe Hill for you?
I'm thinking Heart-Shaped Box. The premise of that sounds amazing.
I honestly don't even remember the premise, but that's the one I hear about the most.
It's the one where the guy collects morbid objects.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So I got that ahead of me. I only have two or three more stories left in Final Fantasy IV: The After Years.
Yeah, and then you're on to five, right?
Yeah, I might take a little bit of a break. I bought five in the Steam Summer Sale, so I have it on PC now.
Okay.
I might take a little break of it because I got a bunch of stuff during the Summer Sale that I kind of want to dabble with.
Yeah.
But well, like we'll see. Fable, for one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you told me you never played a Fable game, which, I mean, I guess...
I played it a little bit at my friend's house. I didn't have an Xbox, right? So yeah. my friend did. My good friend Casey, he had an Xbox. And I'd go over there and I'd play Halo and stuff. But Fable, that's a RPG. You sink time into it. So I want to play that. What else? Oh, the big thing. I almost forgot. On Friday, I have a tour of Michael Myers' house at Halloween 4. I'm bringing my my collector's mask, and Deb is going to take pictures of me, and this poor real estate agent is going to be PO'd, but whatever.
Oh, man. I kind of feel bad for her. I will be
posting pictures.
I feel bad for her.
Yeah, Devin said bringing my prop knife was too much, so it's just the mask.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the knife would be way too much.
But that's about it. Let's go ahead and get into the review. So like I said, guys, this is your only spoiler warning. We're going to review the 2019 reimagining of Child's Play. Jay, got some background. Didn't know if maybe you wanted to dabble with a 6-second plot summary.
No, I think it's a movie, Larry. So I think it's
dude, you haven't done one forever.
Oh, I know.
Hey, didn't even have to do Silent Hill 2.
I know. Hey, I.
But that's fine. So this is it was labeled a remake, but I think it's better described as a reimagining of the 1988 film directed by Lars Klevberg and written by Tyler Burton Smith. This was Klevberg's first big film, which was preceded by a German film called Polaroid, which was released earlier this year.
I think he did a fantastic job. If this is like his first like big, I mean, not to get obviously spoilers into what I thought of it, but you know.
And then Smith had previously written video games such as Sleeping Dogs and Quantum Break. Never played either of them. So
Sleeping Dogs is a really fun, just like over the top GTA style game set in Hong Kong.
How's the writing?
I don't remember, so probably not great.
Okay, there you go. So the film serves as a reboot / reimagine, like I said, of the Child's Play franchise as a whole. It stars Aubrey Plaza, Gabrielle Bateman, Brian Tyree Henry, and Mark Hamill. So Aubrey, everyone knows her from her role as April Ludgate in Parks and Rec. She also had roles in Dirty Grandpa, the show Legion, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Never seen Legion.
Either of I. I heard it's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
And then Gabrielle Bateman. He is the new Andy.
Okay.
And he had small roles in Annabelle and Lights Out.
I don't think I've actually seen either of those.
Annabelle is Lights Out was better as the short YouTube video, not the whole movie. When they started explaining stuff and making it longer, it was less good.
Yeah, I can definitely see that with that premise, so.
Brian Tyree Henry only started acting in 2015, but he had great roles in the TV show Atlanta, which I love, If Beale Street Could Talk, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I still need to see that.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, really? Yep. Damn, I think I know what I'm doing tomorrow. So
okay. and then, obviously, everyone knows Mark Hamill from his role as Luke Skywalker, but to me, he will always be the greatest Joker to ever wear the purple coat.
I agree.
This is the first time a Chucky film has gone without Don Mancini and Brad Dourif. So before the release of Child's Play 2, MGM sold the rights to the sequels to Universal Studios. But it retained the rights to the original film.
Okay.
Because of this, MGM is able to reboot the original film and potentially start their own franchise off of the reboot. So entirely separate from Don Mancini's world.
Okay. Okay.
Mancini was offered executive producer role along with David Kirshner, the original writer, meaning original producer, but they turned the offer down. Mancini was mad because Chucky had been his baby for 30 years, and he is currently working on a Child's Play TV show, which I haven't seen a lot of news about. I don't know why he turned down the role. Like this, the two, we're going to get into this during the review, but these two things can definitely exist without each other, I think.
Oh yeah, no, I would agree with that. And like, not only that, I mean, it might be maybe whoever he was doing the show for might have had something in like a contract saying
no, it was all him.
Oh really?
Yeah, he has some very strong quotes.
Oh, maybe he's just.
I know that the girl who played Tiffany, I forget her name.
Jennifer Tilly.
Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know she came out in support of him, but I don't know. Like, I was very nervous about this, as we talked about, but I am no longer, obviously, I've seen it.
Yeah.
the composer for this film was Bear McCreary. He has had a very prolific career. He did the 2019 Godzilla, won an Emmy for his work on Da Vinci's Demons, and he scored 2018's God of War.
Well, he did a good job in God of War. I can't say much for the rest, so.
You haven't seen the new Godzilla, have you?
Nope.
It's pretty good. Yeah. The film was shot on a budget of $10 million, and it opened at $14 million in the box office, and has grossed $23.5 million as of Monday. So,
a week and a half. That seems kind of low for
R-rated film opening against Toy Story. It did pretty good.
Oh, I forgot about Toy Story.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta think R-rated film and what it opened against. It's pretty good. The studio is happy with it, so we should see more.
I really, if they can keep up the quality specifically, I'm excited for a sequel if we get one.
All right, yeah. Justin, give me a 3-2-1, and I will do this again.
So, 3-2-1, go.
Film opens telling us that the Buddy doll is actually an electronic Alexa kind of thing that can walk around and control the objects in your house. Flash to the Vietnam factory where they're being made, and the worker is being treated terribly, and he hardwires it so it doesn't have any safety features, and he kills himself. Doll gets picked up by Aubrey Plaza. She gives it to her son as a bootleg toy. The toy works, but it's kind of weird. Andy starts making friends with it and starts making jokes with it because it's definitely broken. It definitely acts different than all the other Buddy dolls. But the doll really wants to be Andy's friend. Andy doesn't want to be his friend anymore. He starts killing people to make Andy be his friend again. Big climactic scene goes down when Buddy gets stolen, but he wants Andy to be his friend forever, so he tries to kill his mom. Andy and his friends get locked in a toy store during the mass release of the Buddy doll 2. Andy and the detective are able to kill Chucky in order to save Aubrey Plaza, and Chucky gets ultimately destroyed at the very end.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was... Yeah.
Yeah. I probably gave a little bit too much background, but nah, there you go.
Yeah, whatever. No, I mean, all in all, the plot was good.
Yeah. Like, all right, so getting into it. So pros. I really think that them choosing to follow Andy as the protagonist in this film instead of following the mom as opposed to the 1988 film brought a really unique perspective to this movie, and it benefited from it a lot.
Yeah, I actually have that as well, because I mean, you can definitely see, I mean, Andy's a loner, right? Mm-hmm. So he immediately gets attached to this thing that can give him, like, for lack of a better word, like, love him back.
Yep.
Right? And so he's immediately attached to it. And I mean, it kind of goes from there, obviously, but no, I agree. Yeah.
And then another pro that I have is that establishing the Chucky doll as semi-sentient right off the rip was a really smart move. I don't know if people would have bought into, like, not believing Chucky was more than he seemed, but it's very quickly established that this Chucky doll is something more than what it was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right at the gate, I mean, everybody knows that it's kind of weird, but they just seem okay with it, which, I mean, you know, to each his own. I guess where they're living in that town kind of seems like that'd be fine and okay.
Yeah. And then another really cool thing that I thought is it allowed us to sympathize with the character of Chucky in a way you couldn't in the original. I mean, we'll probably get into this a lot more, but the original, right, the doll was a serial killer. He was a bad guy. But in this one, Chucky's almost like a child, right? He's looking to be loved. He's looking to have a best friend, and that's what he's trying to find. And he gets that from Andy because Andy has no friends. But as Andy starts to get friends and Chucky kind of gets neglected and sees Andy get neglected, he starts reacting in like a vicious childlike manner.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I don't want to go as far as saying like Chucky's like the anti-hero. But like,
he kind of is though at times.
Well, exactly. Like he is. I mean, they set it up really well. I thought it was kind of stupid at first when it was just like, oh, you know, language inhibitor and violence inhibitor off. But I mean, it really makes sense. He is just like every other Chucky doll, except for he's allowed to learn the violent and offensive things that he's being shown.
Yeah, just like a child. It's kind of cool because he learns it actually from watching.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre too.
Yeah, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. Yes, exactly right. Yeah. And he sees Andy laughing at it, so he thinks that's like a good thing to do, and the violence is good. And it's weird. Before we get into that stuff, though, there were some genuinely funny scenes with Chucky. Like I like the one where he wants to call him Han Solo at the very beginning.
Okay, yeah.
And he's, I thought that was a funny little riff.
This is Chucky for Tupac.
Repeating stuff.
Like the whole "this is for Tupac."
Yeah, like it was just really small, funny stuff, and I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah.
And then getting into the kills and kind of more towards the end of the plot, at first it was really, really cool to watch this doll, who we were kind of sympathizing with as the audience, give bad people what they had coming to them.
Yes. Especially like watching him kill a
creepy boyfriend, who was actually a married man that no one knew about. That was good. And he was abusive too. So it was good to see him get his. Watching the creepy landlord get just massacred. I mean, it's nice when people in horror films die.
When they, like, deservedly so. Like,
yeah, because it's not nice to watch people who don't deserve it. Like, that almost nihilistic, rough part. But watching these bad people get what's coming to them is kind of nice. Especially the cat. Seeing a cat finally get its evil self get put down for hurting poor Andy. It was nice.
Yeah, it was brutal. I would like to think I like most animals, most types of animals.
That was a mean cat.
Oh, it was a mean cat, but I mean, still, it was rough.
And then the one last pro I had during the final like climactic scene, where you know that Chucky, the buddy doll, I guess, is able to control other products of the Caslin Corporation. But I liked how Chucky had to control them. They didn't become self-sentient.
Yes.
To me, that's a very minor detail that they paid attention to, but it was very, very important that they did.
Yeah, and it was almost like he could not only like control them, but he could like, I'm trying to think of the word, but like put himself, like transfer himself into them. I mean, we see
it. But he had to be focused on it, right? So, yes. Like, he had to, like, actively make them do things. They didn't just become self-sentient by him touching them. And I think that's a really small detail, but a really good detail. Because when he stopped doing it, right, they stopped acting out. Like, he was in control of it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool. So, going to my cons, though.
So, hold on. There is one, kind of one thing another pro I have is that for the first time in a long time, when it comes to new movies, I feel like the trailer didn't ruin a lot.
That's very true. So I didn't watch many of the trailers. I only watched, I think, one, maybe two.
Okay. Well, it didn't give away a lot. I mean, like, obviously, there. I don't think there's a lot to, like, surprise you with, but it didn't give away, like, a lot of, like, the humor in it. Like, I had no idea it would be as funny. Like, I mean, when he kills that, like, when the guy is in, like, the big buddy doll and he takes the head off and, like, blood sprays all over the little girl. That was
hilarious. Like, super excessive, but actually kind of funny, yeah.
And, like, I don't know, you know, I have to give them, like, props for making because
obviously
trailer.
We really, really enjoyed Halloween 2018, but one of the best scenes in that movie was given away in the trailer.
Was it? I'm trying to remember now.
Long shot when he's walking through the houses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's
and
a good
the
point.
Steam was still effective in the movie, but I would have rather not known that going into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like Pet Sematary, this year's one. I mean, we knew that it was
coming. Yeah, and like the big difference between that and this is like Pet Sematary 2019 literally was just a straight up remake, and when they did pretend to change things, they ended up doing the exact same thing anyways in the end, like cutting the neighbor's ankle.
I was like,
fake out, but just kidding, we did do it.
Yeah. Again, this I think the, I mean, thinking of it, the trailers only as well is, I mean, the first time we saw the first trailer, we were skeptical. It was as soon as they started releasing like these shorter, tighter trailers.
Yep.
That, I mean, both of our minds changed on it, right? I mean,
well, we that and then the Mark Hamill announcement.
Oh yeah, which I mean, obviously we'll get into audio, but he killed it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, sorry about your
cons. So going into cons, the first one I have, and this is a big one for me, is that I really did not care for any of Andy's friends. Any of them. They were, like, not really his friend. They were kind of, like, using him. Like, they were mean to him. Like, they believed him, but then they threw him under the bus. Like, it was... And especially the one friend who ended up taking the buddy doll from him, right? It was just...
I don't think it was ever like really established that was like his friend though, right? Like he was just kind of there. And I mean,
sure.
Personally, I agree with you. I didn't care for his friends or quote unquote friends. But I mean, like it's, I don't really have that as a con because like it to me it's believable because like I grew up and I knew people who were treating other people like that.
Yeah, but on top of the boy and the girl who like helped him take down Chucky, like pull the battery out, and like they betrayed him, and it was just a really weird.
Well, they're very like, I mean, kids are very wishy-washy, and I mean that's how I think they did a good job at like being kids, and you know, you always when you're a kid, you know, you want to hang out with like the cool guy. So when the cool guy says this guy sucks, then okay, yeah sure, he sucks.
Maybe I guess I just didn't care for that.
No, I do agree. I don't care for
the
that,
next big con I have is that the actor who played Aubrey Plaza's boyfriend.
Yes,
like, he was not that attractive. Aubrey Plaza is an objectively attractive woman, and like I never bought into that relationship at all.
I mean,
and it was weird. It was like it was hard for me to think that she would like him. He didn't bring anything to the table. Like for the relationship, like he wasn't like providing anything. He was mean to her. He was mean to Andy. He was mean to like the entire like system that they were living in. And obviously he ended up being a really big scumbag too. But the biggest thing is like, I never really felt that a character like Aubrey Plaza's, like Karen, like the mom, right?
Yeah.
Would date that kind of guy.
Some people are into that kind of guy, unfortunately.
And I don't know, maybe it's because I just watch Parks and Rec too much, you know, and I don't know. It was very hard for me to buy into that relationship. I was like never believing that that was how it was going to go. And I don't know. So that's kind of that for me.
To me, that relationship, to kind of step back to it, is, I know it's like the stereotypical single mom and her boyfriend relationship.
Yeah, and I do get that, but I don't know. In the end, I just never bought into the relationship, I guess.
Okay, yeah. No, I mean, that's fair to say, yeah.
All right, and then the last con that I have, we talked about this a little bit, but I think the movie really struggled to, like, find its identity between, like, being a horror, being a comedy, and almost being a drama, because we mentioned it a little bit, but I really sympathize with the buddy doll.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think that I agree to a point because I think it didn't know how to identify itself, but in the end, it kind of made its own identity.
It did, and I stopped feeling sympathetic for it when it killed the detective's mom, because that seemed like mean and malicious. Like there was, like everybody else he had killed at that point had either threatened Andy or like threatened their friendship.
Yeah.
But the mom never really did, and it was a cool scene, right? I mean, it was a fine scene and a fine sequence, and it was very tense, but I lost my sympathy for the doll, and I think if that death hadn't have been there, I think it was there to, like, make the detective stop liking Andy, like, to force him to be almost, like, another antagonist for Andy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I think the movie would have done better to, like, maybe focus in on, like, the horror drama or the horror comedy instead of trying to do all of it in, like, one go.
See, I don't know, because, I mean, like, I find that, so to me, like, the first Child's Play, like, the one we reviewed last week, yes, is more horror drama. Yes. And I find the newer Chucky movies, like Seed of Chucky,
they're horror
and
comedy.
Bride of Chucky. Yeah, and to be a horror comedy. And I'm actually really happy where this landed, because it gave you a touch of both without going, like, I mean, some parts in Seed of Chucky especially are just, like,
they're ridiculous.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Not in a bad way, but they're just ridiculous.
Okay, not in a bad way to some people. Well, the turkey baster stuff was like
of Bride of Chucky. Like, it had established that was the way it was going.
Yeah, I don't know. I to me, I think that, like, the newer Chucky's. I haven't seen Cult
and Curse.
And Curse, yeah, but I think they went a little too off the rails with the comedy, and I'm glad.
Well, it's weird because Curse of Chucky goes hard back into horror.
Really,
it really drops off the comedy aspect.
I have to watch it. Well, that's good. I mean, I personally like that because I found, like, a lot of the newer Chuckies. I mean, newer obviously being years and years ago, but I found them to be dull.
Yeah. No, like I said, I didn't have a lot of points for it, but I do wish the movie had, like, picked a tone and kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I do have one last con that we haven't touched on. I hated the CGI.
I'm going to get into that in cinematography.
Okay.
But I do have notes
okay.
on that.
Okay. All right.
So plot. I gave it a 7.5.
I gave it an 8.5. I thought it was just, like, super fun, like,
popcorn. So we both went up half a point from the previous week.
Oh, really? I mean, it's making strides in the right direction.
All right. So cinematography. The first pro that I have is we talked about this a little bit at length during last week, but this film is far more aesthetically pleasing than the 88 film.
Yeah, well, it just in a way, I know it's supposed to, like, look dingy and crappy because of where it's set in, like, quote unquote the hood, but, like, even that, it doesn't have that 80s feel, and it just
drops
that refreshing.
Yes, it's refreshing. Really, really, yeah, it's nice. It didn't try to do, like, what Stranger Things or other films that look back on that time period tried to do by, like, glamorizing it, like, using that same aesthetic. Like, they really just embraced that this is a 2019 interpretation of the original, and they didn't try to bring in the old aesthetic, which I really, really appreciated.
Yeah. One thing I will say that I actually really, really enjoyed is a huge pro for me is, like, this is going to sound weird, but, like, a lot of the times I find in movies, like, phone screens and all that stuff, they always look really fake to me.
Yeah.
I think they actually did a really good job at, like, making you feel like it's a, well, like, kind of like we just mentioned, like, it's a modern world. I mean, you see technology all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of funny you said that because I was watching an episode of Trailer Park Boys.
Yeah.
And there's a part where, like, Snoop Dogg Skypes on their phone.
Okay.
And you can tell it's green screen, not only because it just looks so good, but the image is, like, off kilter with the phone. So yeah, it's, like, sitting, like, off to the side a little bit. I mean, it's fine, like, for what that show is, but you're right. Like, they use the technology and they really place it in, like, a realistic aesthetic, which is nice.
And, I mean, it's crazy because, I mean, if you think about the plot of the movie, it's all based around that technology.
Yeah.
They really went hard into it, and I like the way it looks.
Nope, I totally agree. So a big concern for me going into this, because we saw a little bit of what the new Buddy / Chucky doll was going to look like.
Yeah.
And I was apprehensive because the old one looked like a doll, but then it also could look human.
Yes.
And I would say it was just fine, if not good, in this, right? Like, it looked different, but it looked more robotic, but that's what it was, right?
Yeah, like, it definitely had, like, that, like, android-y feel to it, which I could get. It was weird at first. I'll be 100% honest. It was really weird at first.
It was weird at first, yes.
But you get used to it, and I think it actually ends up looking good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also like the way that the doll moves. like it moves like a child, but also like a robot. It was a like it was a good like I'm thinking in particular the scene where Andy lures it in to get attacked by his friends or the battery out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was like I think that might have been our very first scene watching Chucky like move about the space like by himself, and it looked good and it was creepy in a way too.
Yeah, and it's weird. I mean, it's weird thinking back to it because, again, we just watched the original. So, I mean, mm-hmm. whenever they had him moving around, it was clearly an actor in a suit.
Yeah.
And you could tell the difference. But here, it just, like, it. You're right. Like, it looks smooth and it looks natural.
And the scene that really put me at ease, it kind of happened towards the beginning of the movie. It was when Andy was laying in bed and he woke up and Chucky's sitting there staring at him.
Man, I love that movie. I love this movie.
Like asking if he can like go to sleep now or whatever, and like yeah. he's his best friend and stuff. Like it was just, it, I mean, it sort of go back to the whole idea that what Hamill brought to the character and stuff. But like you felt sympathy. You felt like Chucky was a real person that you could sympathize with, and I think it was because of the way he looked. I think that was a huge part of it, and the way he moved about the movie.
Yeah. No, I agree.
The next pro I have is that there were some really, really fun and inventive kills. I talked about it during like the plot a little bit, but I really loved the death of the creepy boyfriend.
You know, it's funny because I have to say, like, his death and the landlord's death are like by mm-hmm. far my favorites.
Yeah,
in the film, and I mean, it's funny because they're obviously the two that deserve it the most. Mm-hmm. But no, they were inventive and they were. It's just something about this movie. Like, everything about it was surprisingly refreshing.
Yeah, like, I mean, the rototiller coming for his head, and, like, it was tense, and it was, like, it had build up, and, like, Chucky was there, but he wasn't there until, like, the very, very end, and it was just, and the Christmas lights, too, it was a really, really pretty aesthetic, and I really liked it. I really liked how that entire scene was filmed, and, like I said, all the death scenes, like, we mentioned the creepy landlord, we mentioned, the detective's mom getting killed in the car. And then you brought up, and I can't believe I didn't write this on my notes, but when the guy in the Big Buddy doll gets stabbed in the neck and his helmet comes off and he sprays blood all over these little kids in the audience. Like, it's just really, really, like, well choreographed death sequences. And I really, really like that.
Yeah, I will say too, I was gonna, like, the whole finale scene mm-hmm. like where all like the teddy bear buddy dolls
yeah and the drones
yeah like all that, like it's they make you feel like you're a part, like they make you feel hectic
mm-hmm.
but you're still grounded enough that like you can't tell what's going on. I don't know, it was just yeah. I think it was really well done.
And then you mentioned the CGI, and I'm going to say first, I would say overall
okay,
the CGI was okay, but there yes. were times when it was bad.
The main things that, I mean, we'll get into it in cons.
We can do it right now. We can just go into okay. it.
I personally think that every time Chucky jumped at the screen,
yes,
were the worst offenders. Like, I'm talking like they were better graphics than like the movies from the 90s. But
yeah, then also the teddy bears at times, like during that big toy sequence, I want to get into that because that's actually probably my biggest con. The teddy bears looked fake when they were pulling down people.
Yeah,
like there was just different times throughout this movie where like you're involved and you kind of get taken aback because like, oh, that looked fake.
Yeah, I mean it's weird. It's almost like when it's like super, like when it's a close-up of Chucky, well Chucky jumping at the screen, or whenever there's like a lot of stuff going on is when it's at its worst. But when there's kind of like people are at like medium, when the CGI is like medium range and it's like just a little bit's going on, then it's fine.
Yeah. The next con that I have is that I felt the pacing was off at times. Like I feel like the movie probably could have cut out 10 or 15 minutes and it would have been almost a little bit better. It was just a little bit long.
See, I don't know, because what, like, wasn't the runtime only like an hour and a half?
Yeah, the runtime was 90 minutes, but I don't know. I think it could have been like almost like an hour and 20. It felt like I don't think there was enough stuff there, right? Like, I don't see why Chuck, like, because Chucky almost kills the cat once and he ends up killing it again, right? I don't know. Like, it just felt a little long, and I don't know if maybe I'm getting old And I hope not, because I'm about to go see a Tarantino film in like 2 weeks. That's going to be damn near 3 hours. But I don't know. I just felt like it was just odd pacing. Maybe it wasn't even the length. Maybe it was just the way like the film progressed.
I mean, it had to be because I, like, again, personally, I think Chucky trying to almost kill the cat.
Yeah.
You needed to see that because that, like, that is his progression of violence.
Okay.
You need to see that.
No, that's a good point. And then my last con, Jay, is that, so you mentioned that you liked it, but I thought the toy store meltdown was difficult to follow and almost hard to watch at times.
Oh man, I loved it. Specifically, the, like, the very, very start,
mm-hmm,
and the very end of that scene, I like.
Yeah.
The kind of in-between where everything is going haywire.
So I guess I can ask you, and you can maybe, because I've been thinking this, was it, like, too dark for you?
No.
So, actually, it's kind of funny. The movie theater me and Devin have been going to, there have been a couple of times, like, during Endgame in particular, where, like, it was hard to see what was going on, but I know that wouldn't have been an issue with it. And I think it's because they don't dim the lights in the theater that much.
They don't dim your lights? They, like...
Well, they do, but I'm telling you, like, it's bright.
That sucks, because I will tell you.
So maybe that's why, because, like, I even mentioned it to Devin, this is, like, the third movie now where we've gone to see. Brightburn was another one where it was kind of hard to see at times. And I thought maybe it was, like, the barn sequences, it was just dark. But maybe it's the theater, because, like I said, it was hard for me to see what was going on. So maybe it was a theater thing and not a movie thing.
So I will say, actually, during this movie, usually they dim the lights as the trailers are starting. Mm-hmm. They actually didn't. So I actually had to go out and ask somebody to come in and, or, like, dim the lights or whatever, because they're still on.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm. They practically turn them off in the theater.
Yeah, when I go to see Midsommar on Thursday, we're going to a different theater because one nearby isn't having it. So maybe I'll pay more attention to it. But yeah, I mean, it was hard for me to see at times. Maybe that was more a theater thing than a movie thing.
Well, I mean, you know, it's your experience with the movie, so I think it has to be there in a con.
I'm not going to change my score, but this was definitely one I buy. Like, I'll be buying this when it comes out.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And so maybe when I watch it, I'll look then. But with that, I gave it a 7.5.
I gave it an 8.5.
All right. Well, perfect. Now we're moving on to audio. First, foremost, most importantly, Mark Hamill, when he was announced to be the new voice of Chucky, I was ecstatic because I don't think I've ever heard Mark Hamill do voice work and not been excited. So my expectations were incredibly high, and he delivered. And not only that, I think he actually went above my expectations because I wasn't prepared for a sympathetic Chucky.
I agree. I mean, again, kind of to go with the look of Chucky, it was definitely weird. The first couple sentences, but then you realize, okay, this is a different Chucky. This is their take, and then you're perfectly fine with it. I think the voice, I agree, the voice matches.
Mm-hmm. It didn't sound like Joker. It didn't sound like any of the other characters that Hamill had done. Like, it had a little bit of that aesthetic, but it's the same actor, right? So you can kind of expect it.
Yeah.
But, like I said, the big thing for me is, like, I know Hamill can be evil, but he really brought a sympathetic side to Chucky, and I think that all gets credited to him. Like, this is how you feel bad for him, how he wants to be Andy's friend, how he wants to be a good guy, right? He wants to be the friend that Andy doesn't have, and when Andy spurns him, like, he doesn't understand what's going on. And I don't know, I think that was brilliantly done, and I think all props go to Mark Hamill.
No, I agree. I mean, his line delivery, like, he was hilarious. He was sympathetic. Like,
I mean, it's a hell of a thing to step into an actor's prolific shoes, right? I mean, Brad Dourif has been Chucky for 30 years, and we've seen what has happened when people take on iconic horror roles. It's different from Michael Myers and Jason, right? Because they have a mask and it's more a presence than an acting job, right? But in this, just like with the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, like, we're so used to what this character is that a new character has to take on his role. So instead of, like, comparing it to Nightmare on Elm Street, I honestly think it's better to compare it to what Heath Ledger did with the Joker in comparison to Jack Nicholson's interpretation of the Joker, right? Like, people were mad that
was, I remember,
being done and everything. And Ledger blew him away. And I think the exact same thing can be said for what Hamill did.
Yeah, I actually kind of quickly swinging into Batman. I think that's honestly why I'm not that mad about the Pattinson guy.
I mean, we joked about it during TwiCast. I mean, it's not, this isn't a joke, the Batman podcast, but we joked about it with TwiCast, but Pattinson has taken on a lot of very tough roles since being Edward Cullen. And, I mean, if Christopher Nolan's going to cast you to be a lead in one of his films, you can probably be sure you're probably a good actor. Same way if, like, Scorsese or Tarantino picks you up. So we joked about it and stuff, and I really wanted John Hamm, just because I think John Hamm would have been a great Bruce Wayne. But no, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, sorry, anyways.
No, yeah, returning to Chucky, I think that Gabriel Bateman also did a really, really good job as Andy. He's not as cute as the original Andy, obviously, but he was responsible for a lot of the drama. He worked a lot with Chucky and helped bring the human side to the Chucky doll, and I thought it was great. I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah, he definitely, like, he had, I mean, he was a human, and that's a weird saying it that way, but, like, he, in comparison to Chucky, like, he definitely brought something out in Chucky that was important, and he played he did a really, really good job of being, like, an early teenager, maybe?
Yeah, and like I mentioned during the plot review, too, right? This film took a big turn and didn't focus on Karen, and instead focused on Andy. So that means you needed a really, really good performance from Andy. And like I said, Bateman delivered. He hasn't had a lot of big roles, but I would expect him to probably get a lot more looks now because he did a great job in this movie.
Yeah, and I really hope that when they do make a sequel, I hope that they bring him back, because I think he did such a good job. Like, he nailed it. Like, out of all the kid actors we have dealt with, especially recently, I think he's
up there. I really like the kid who played Evil Superman and Brightburn. I thought he did a good job. Then kind of filling out the rest of the cast, I think the rest of the cast did great. I thought Brian Tyree Henry did just leagues better job than the original detective in the original film.
Like, I mean, that's not that hard, but I agree.
He was funny, he was sympathetic, he was aggressive when he needed to be.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really well done. And then the last pro I have is that Bear McCreary, I mean, I'm only starting to realize what work he has been doing. Like, I started realizing it because I really, really like the soundtrack to Godzilla. And then I started doing the research, and I saw his name when they released the score for this Child's Play. And I was like, holy crap. And then I started looking more into him, and I love God of War, and I thought the music was just perfect for this movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, kind of just like with last week, it's been a while since we've had a theme. And I mean, it is like a just kind of like an updated version of the theme. But
he actually used like all, so for the main score, he used like toys you would find in a kid's toy box to do it.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn, that's really cool.
I was reading something about that. But moving into my cons, the first, I mentioned it during like plot, but here too, is as much as I liked Bateman's acting, I thought the other kids were like average to below average, especially like the hyper aggressive bully one. I was like, this is way over the top.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of like the asshole kids, I guess you could say. Yeah. Like, I actually. I didn't, it's weird with the, I'm trying to remember the boy's name. I can't for the life of me. Like the bigger kid.
I don't remember either.
Okay. But I thought he was hilarious, especially, I mean, when they find the head and the girl's like,
I mean, he was hilarious, but he was also like I said, like he was funny, but his character just had so many dramatic shifts that didn't make sense. Like, he was mean to Andy, then he was nice, then he was kind of using Andy, and then he helped Andy, and then he betrayed Andy. And it was just, like, I don't know, like, it was just a lot for me to take in, and I don't think that act, he's just a kid, right? So I'm not going to, like, crap all over him. But that's a lot to ask from a child actor. That's a huge spectrum to ask.
See, it's funny, because, like, I would actually include him in, like, the good actors, because I personally, I think he did a good job being a kid that age.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's just how, unfortunately, kids are assholes. That's how they do.
And then the last con I have is that I mentioned that the sequence was fine, but like the acting and setup and just the way the detective's mom died in the self-driving car was just, again, just so over the top. Like even more so than the landlord and the creepy boyfriend. It was just like, it was just too much. It was like someone just added a little bit too much salt to something, right? Where it's just like, it's just too much.
So like her acting?
Or... Yeah. And it was just like, it was like almost ridiculous in a way. Like goofy. Like I really didn't feel like she was in danger because it was, and maybe it was just the scene and her reacting to the scene and what it was, but it was almost too goofy to really take it too seriously.
I guess I could see that.
I didn't have a lot of points for it. It was just one of the weirder sequences in the film.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. I will say I liked the, obviously, like the theme. It's iconic. It's the same kind of remixed theme of the original, but personally, the music in between, like the music between themes opening and closing, I actually didn't notice that much.
Yeah, and I do agree with that, but they really didn't use the main theme throughout.
Yeah.
But I think that main score is very good, and I do think of it even now. Like I can still think about it in my head.
Oh yeah, like I didn't take a lot of points off it. It was just something I noticed that it was a very like, I don't know, again the theme
a little bit too ambient.
Yeah, it was just kind of like The Conjuring, sure, in between the start and the end. Like yeah. Anyways,
all right. So I gave it 8.5.
I gave it an 8.
All right. So now we're on to How Scary, and I think this is probably going to be where we differ. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
So last week I pontificated about how much the original Child's Play meant to me.
Yeah.
How scary it was to me. How it affected, like, my horror upbringing in a way, right?
Yeah.
So go back and listen to last week's episode if you want to hear me go more in depth with that. But let's just say I really found the original Child's Play scary then and still now. This movie is not as scary, and I have 3 points. We can kind of hash them out if you're cool with that.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
The first and most important is that I sympathized way too much with Chucky in this movie.
I agree. Yeah, it was too sympathetic to be scary.
Yeah, I was never afraid of him. I felt bad for him. Like, there were so many times where I felt terrible for what he was going through. Like, he wanted to be a friend. He saw Andy get pushed by this creep and get like yelled at, saw Andy all upset, heard Andy say he wished he was gone, and he took care of it for him.
Yeah.
Andy betrayed him and then Chucky got picked up by the creep, and the creepy landlord ripped apart, and the guy was going to like do stuff, and he saw he had like cameras hidden in the tenants' apartments, and Chucky gave the creep what was coming to him. And then the cat hurt poor Andy, and Chucky made sure the cat couldn't hurt him again. And that goes into my second point, is that I would argue that most of the deaths, both people and animal, in this film had what was coming to them. I mean, I'm not trying to say, like, if you're a bad person, you should be killed. What I'm trying to say is, like, in horror films, usually you don't get that, right? If you think back to, let's just, any movie, Scream, right? The characters who die in Scream are just kids, they're just teens, right? They really don't do anything. Think about the principal, right? The principal was trying his best to stop what was going on. He gets killed, you feel bad, you're scared, you don't want it to happen. And I don't know, like in this one though, for the most part, like I was fine with it. I mean, even the guy who's in the buddy doll costume, like he was like cheating on his wife,
was he?
Remember that's how she's able to get the doll from him to give to her son. Because he's going to destroy it, and he's like, "Yeah, but if you just," Aubrey Plaza is like, "Yeah, but if you give it to me," and it's most of the people in this movie kind of get what's coming their way, like up until the detective's mom being killed, and then the cop almost being killed, and then Aubrey Plaza being tortured. Like, all the deaths are kind of justified in the sick horror world that they were in. So that's my second point, and then third is that the Chucky doll in this one is far more vulnerable than Chucky was in the OG film. I mean, Chucky literally dies halfway through this movie because they ripped the battery out of him.
Yeah.
And I think because he's more susceptible and more, like I said, just more vulnerable, I think it makes it less scary, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's not like this unstoppable...
Like, you take a damn baseball bat or a driver to him, and you've got him.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like
he's not supernatural. He's not anything, and you know he's sentient. So, like, you're aware of the threat from the get-go. So I don't know. Like, those are the three big reasons why... Like, there are some scary parts. There are some jump parts. Hamill does a good job being creepy. And... But I guess, like... I mentioned this during plot too, is that I feel like the tone didn't stay consistent and it was hard to get a completely horror vibe the whole time. And I don't know. That's kind of my rambling thoughts on the how scary subject.
No, I mean, I mean, it's weird. I agree like wholeheartedly with all three of those points. I mean, Chucky's like in a weird way, not set up like, to be the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost like, you know, again, in a weird way, like Andy's guardian angel.
Yeah.
And no, I agree. It definitely like takes away the like scary horror factor of it.
And maybe it's like a good thing because it took the original Child's Play franchise 4 movies until Bride of Chucky to really embrace Chucky as like almost a comedic actor in the film. Like he's still a slasher killer, right? But it took him almost until Bride of Chucky to be kind of comical and embrace the comical side. But this one, like, if there are sequels, like, maybe they're able to embrace it a little bit more, but honestly, I'd like to see more of a focus on, like, the humanity of Chucky.
It would be definitely an interesting take, and I mean, I think it worked for this one. I mean, did you ever feel compassionate for the original Chucky?
Like... No, I think the only time where I ever felt any kind of compassion might have been when he got shot the first time. And he goes to the voodoo guy and he's like talking about how he's bleeding and stuff. And
yeah,
like maybe a little bit there, but I don't know. Like,
yeah. It's an interesting take for sure.
So, I mean, unless you have anything else to add for how scary, I gave it a 5.
I gave it a 4.
All right, Justin. So with that, let's go ahead and review our scores and then announce the final score. For plot, I gave it a 7.5. You gave it an 8.5. For cinematography, I gave it a 7.5. You gave it an 8.5. For audio, I gave it an 8.5. You gave it an 8. And for how scary, I gave it a 5. You gave it a 4. That gives it a Here's Johnny final score of a 72% C-. That is obviously higher than the original. The original had a 69% D+. And the 72% actually slots it right above Resident Evil 2, the original, and right below Tucker and Dale versus Evil with a 73.
I mean, I will say for sure one thing is, I mean, I kind of mentioned this to you last week. I actually think I enjoy this one better than the original. I think it just, like, I don't know if it's the modern take or...
I mean, the original is a more scary film. Again, listen to last week's episode if you want to hear me pontificate about that at length. But this one is a more fun film. This is a film that I think you could take your kids to, scare them in the moment but not have lasting effects of terror of dolls like in the original. And I don't know, I liked it. And no, like we said, like this is one you should definitely go see. It's definitely worth your time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about bringing my kid to go see it, but yeah.
There's actually kids in the theater where we went to go see it.
Really? There was 5 people in the theater when I went to go see it. So
all right, so next we have to put into a subgenre. I think it's kind of easy. Mad scientist.
Oh, yeah. I mean that.
Because I mean, it's not so much that it's focused on the mad scientist. It's focusing on the technology and the terror created by the science.
Although we didn't really go over the fact that this guy turned the robot evil and then instantly killed himself.
Well, I don't know. Slave labor is terrible no matter where it takes place.
Yeah, that's fair.
So mad scientist. And Justin, that is our first Mad Scientist review, then.
I'm sure the first of many to come.
And then the last thing is we did get an email from one of our listeners. This email comes from our patron, Matt. He says, "Hey guys, just wanted to drop a quick line about the remake and put in my two cents as someone who has never seen the original Child's Play. How dare you, sir? I have to say, I thought this was a fun movie. The kill scenes were over the top, but oh so satisfying given the nature of some of the victims." Yep.
Agreed.
"I really like the fact that this was its own movie in a way. They took an old favorite and modernized it with a fresh story with a relevant social commentary. While the movie was a bit campy in some places, I liked it overall. I left the theater feeling like it was worth the ticket price. Oh, and Mark Hamill killed it as always. Can't wait to hear your thoughts, Matt." No, we agree 110%. And yeah, I think we covered all that stuff. I think we are in agreement.
Yeah.
So with that, Justin, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. We have a brief commercial from the That's Not How Science Works podcast, and then we're going to get into the closing.
Sounds good.
Do you ever watch a horror movie and think, "Oh, wow, that headshot didn't have nearly enough blood"? Don't the writers know that 20% of your blood is in your head?
Are you the type of person that tells your friends, "Well, why yes, in space no one can hear you scream because the molecules are too far apart to transmit sound waves"?
Does it seriously annoy you when a horror movie doesn't explain its rules to you or claims to have horror rules and then just ignores them?
Do you ever express these concerns to your friends who tell you that you should stop worrying so much because it's just a horror movie, Sam?
Then stop lecturing your friends about physics and come listen to our podcast, That's Not How Science Works, which I co-host with my awesome friend, Nicole.
In our podcast, Caitlin and I discuss science in different pieces of media, such as movies or TV shows, in various genres, and dissect whether that science is good, bad, or just plain ridiculous. Often, we also have special guests who help us rant about bad science in their areas of expertise.
We release new episodes every other Monday, and you can find us wherever you usually download your podcasts. We like to think of this as a podcast for the science curious. Whether you're Sam with a dedicated YouTube channel complaining about bad science in horror movies, or just like to learn things while listening to friends banter about what they watched that week, we'd love for you to listen in.
You can find out more by going to our website, thatsnotscience.com, or by looking us up on Twitter at @thnhswpod. We hope you give us a listen. Now back to your regularly scheduled horror enthusiasts, Larry and Justin, and that's definitely a word that's a real word and not a word that I just made up, and whatever terrifying thing they're discussing that would probably give me daymares for a week.
So Justin, I know you didn't like Brightburn, and I gave it a higher score than I gave this one, but I think this is definitely one of the better films we've seen in 2019.
Oh, I agree. Weirdly enough, I think, I'm trying to think, other than Brightburn, have we seen anything else in theaters this year?
Pet Sematary?
I think this is probably my favorite movie I've seen in theaters this year.
Oh, even over Us?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Us, to me, was interesting. I think it had a lot to say, but I definitely think this was more fun.
Definitely more fun. Yeah, okay, I'll go with that. Although, there's that scene in Us with the, what you and Kyle both hated, but I liked, with NWA.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, that was one scene. This whole movie was fun.
So, yeah, guys, next week it will be me and Rachel reviewing Midsommar. If you want to get kind of a little intro to Rachel, check out her Zombie Girls podcast or listen to our re-review of Suspiria 2018. But until then, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at heresjohnnypodcast@gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at @HeresJohnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/HeresJohnnyPodcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers, so head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.